Hello and welcome to the Dark Room with Andy McKinney, formerly of Molly Hatchet. Here it is, our first episode, official, like, and everything. First interview starts tonight. Hang tight. Hey everybody, this is Andy McKinney with the Dark Half. We're starting the show finally after some major difficulties on my end, of course. I'll take accountability for that. We're going to do our first show this week, so what better time than the celebration of our nation's birthday. Happy 4th of July, everybody, and I hope you had a good weekend. Everybody's safe and accounted for, and returned with your beer kegs empty. Okay, I've been telling you guys about a friend of mine that I've been watching on Instagram, and I believe I actually caught his little part of his show, which is a very cool concept. You know, we came across on a Schecter base Instagram moment that popped up, and I believe he was doing a Queen song, but I can't remember. He's got so much stuff. So I got with me from Buffalo, New York, my good friend, my new friend, my fellow brethren of bottom, bass player Alexander Braun, B-R-A-U-N, like Braun. What's up, Alexander? How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Andy. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be here.
Absolutely. You better be, because you're the special one. You're the, what do they call it? The guinea pig. No, what was that? I remember I caught a Schecter bass. I think you did like a Schecter bass segment where you did a Queen song or something. It was so cool that I try to like all the Schecter bass stuff anyway, because I love my Schecter. But I believe you were doing, what Queen song was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was their song, You're My Best Friend.
Oh, that's
it was my childhood friend's birthday, and she's a huge Queen fan, and so it's a little gift to her because of all the quarantine stuff going on. I decided to cover the bass line to that, specifically the chorus, just as a little, hey, here's your birthday gift, and I know you love Queen, so
yeah,
a little, personal play.
That was special, too. Yeah, that's right, because I saw her thanking you for that. That was very cool. You know, and speaking about these times, and you know, I was in a position where I didn't have any gear with me, so I couldn't go live, I couldn't do anything, I couldn't play venues. I was like just learning how to work some new studio stuff, because I'm old and I'm on the verge of what do they call that, dementia. I got that old timer's disease. I don't pick up too quickly anymore, but there's so much stuff out there, and that's what I liked about your Instagram feed, is you got some pretty cool, you got a green screen going behind you sometimes, right?
No, actually, I do all of my setting shots at various locations, physical locations. I'll go to parks, my front yard.
Oh.
I'll go to different towns. Oh yeah, I travel and do them in front of like little audiences, so it's kind of, I get the live experience while recording.
Oh, that is cool, man. So once again, your Instagram is at Bassist Braun, B-A-S-S-I-S-T. Pardon my S's, they sound like messes. Braun@Instagram. Okay, if you want to correct me on any of that, because I got all your social media stuff here, just feel free to put that out there, because
perfect, you got it right, so we're on a good start.
Yeah, and you got your Facebook account now, that's Alexander Braun as well, right?
Yep, it's Alexander Braun Music.
Okay, and also you have a YouTube channel, Alexander, mm-hmm, Bassist Braun.
That's correct.
Nice. I advise you guys go check this guy out, man. He's really entertaining. I actually thought that was like green screen stuff. It was so, it looked so good, you know, and sounded so good. What are you using? What are you using there for when you plug in? What do you use?
So I go DI out of my amp head. I use a Harkey 3500.
Mm-hmm.
And I go right into a Steinberg interface, which goes directly into Pro Tools 10.
See, now you're starting to get foreign to me. That's where I'm getting off. Yeah, I remember I did a little demo, which, crazy enough, I got a song number one in Nashville right now from. But I did a little demo tape. It's all me playing, all me singing. But I did it on Cubase, and I like to call it a magical accident, because it just came out so good. You know, the more I played with it, the better the sound got, the better the tones got, and the mix itself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, mm-hmm. Everything you put out sounds great, man. So tell me some more about you. You're from Buffalo?
Yeah, I'm from Buffalo, New York. I've lived here my whole life. I started getting into music through a classical violinist, believe it or not. His name is Andre Rue. He's a German violinist. He does mega touring across the whole globe. And when I was six, I was just drawn to how he played the violin specifically. Wow. And growing up, I told myself I wanted to play violin like him. So in grade school, like fifth grade till about ninth grade, I played violin. Wow. And by my junior year of high school, my orchestra teacher told me my hands were too big to keep playing the violin.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, so it worked out perfectly, because around that time, I also picked up bass guitar because of Geddy Lee of Rush. He's the biggest influence on me ever. I just heard their song, actually, Red by Jetta.
Wow.
And just instantly fell in love with their bass line. And so I was taking lessons for about a month around that time, and unfortunately I gave it up due to, you know, some conflicts with the instructor I had, and I was self-taught afterwards. But when my orchestra teacher advised me to switch instruments with a thicker neck, she suggested the upright bass.
Wow.
Because the neck was 10 bigger than the violin.
Yeah, that's a little difference there. That's a little switch.
It was quite an adjustment, that's for sure. But so I ended up learning upright bass in a classical setting for the last 2 years of my high school academic life.
Right.
And then afterwards, I just proceeded with bass guitar.
Yeah, because I was reading up some of the... some of your teachers there at
Villa Maria College.
Villa Maria, yeah. And you had a pretty popular teacher there, huh? Pretty big influence there. Tell everybody who you had teaching.
So my bass teacher at my college was Jerry Livingston. He did some studio work and toured with Rick James back in the 80s, and then when Rick James made his comeback tour in like the mid to late 90s, he was his touring bassist.
That's
so
right.
He did a lot of bass tracking for the guy.
all bass players should know that name, you know what I mean? At least if you don't know, can't go, where do I know that name from? You better at least know his name. I'm Rick James, bitch. You know, to get there playing with Rick James, and when Rick's an amazing bass player himself, so.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, I wanted to ask you, was it weird for you? First, I wanted to say it's funny because your music teacher kind of skirted you away from your instrument of choice, and it reminds me of a story. When I was in, like, fourth grade, I wanted to play the trumpet for some reason. I have no idea why. I just thought it was a cool sound. And, you know, I think Chuck Mangione was out back then, and it was, like, the biggest hit. And I loved that sound, and I wanted to play the trumpet. But my music teacher kind of pissed me off because she goes, "Nah, you can't play that." You know, basically, she told me I had Barney Rubble lips, so I guess you can't play the play the trumpet with no lips. But you know, I have to thank her at the same time because I went on to bass myself, and of course, Geddy Lee influence, Steve Harris influence, Stanley Clark influence. You know. It's amazing to me how, you know, you're a bit younger than me, but it's so amazing to me how the same people I grew up listening to still influence people your age, you know, and even younger nowadays. It's amazing that the kids that I see on YouTube playing, you know, Dimebag Darrell stuff on guitar and, you know, Jaco Pastorius on bass. I'm like, what? Makes me want to make a coffee table out of my new bass.
Well, a lot of that credit goes to my dad. He has a good taste in music, so if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have heard of Rush. So I have to thank my father on that one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Who was it mainly that influenced you into going into music? So in your family, meaning, because nobody in my family played music at all. Matter of fact, nobody else had blonde hair but me, so we won't get into that, but it's still under.
Well, it's funny.
Go ahead.
It's funny you mentioned that, too, Andy, because no one in my family besides me played music either. Like, my parents did for, like, a couple years in school because my grandparents forced them to, but other than that, they claim and all their siblings claim that they don't have a musical bone in their body, so they're not sure where I got it from, but I took it to the next level.
Yeah, did you have older brothers and sisters that listened to rock? Or because I did have that. I had an older brother and older sister that were playing the old Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult. So even some Molly Hatchet back in the 70s, you know. Like, who the hell are these guys?
But well, funny as that is. Sorry, go on.
No, I just thought it was funny because nobody in my family played at all, and they all, you know, they've gone on to have nice careers and, you know, become great parents and normal people, where I became the black sheep and decided to go in a rock band. Go ahead. Well, you were.
I was actually going to say I'm actually the oldest of my siblings.
Oh, okay.
So, I just got into it from my dad, as I said. So there was no like older sibling or idol other than my father who really got me into that music, and all the rest of my siblings are following a similar pattern. Except my brother wants to be like a WWE wrestler, and my sister wants to be a graphic designer, and then my brother is like an airplane fanatic. So we all went separate ways from our parents, but
that's
very
cool.
Diverse group of kids.
Very cool. Yeah, I was reading up, you know, you from Buffalo, you were saying there's a scene up there that you grew into and played some venues, you know, in local areas, and then you moved along where you got to open up for some international acts, including the Molly Hatchet band we mentioned. How was she as a singer? How was Molly? Was she good?
Molly had a great voice,
yeah. Yeah, she liked flirting with disaster too much, but anyway.
I heard that too.
So, along the way, how old were you when you were doing the club scene there in Buffalo?
So, I was 16. I think that's my earliest memory. I was 16. And my first band I was in was a Van Halen tribute band. And my uncle was the drummer. And he called me up one day, and he's like, "Hey, you know, I need a bassist." And he's like, "In your family?" He's like, "So let's kind of put the two and two together." So I started off playing Van Halen, and that was my first introduction to bar scenes. So my father had to come, obviously, chaperone at the time, because I have a baby face. So
yeah.
That was the introduction to the bar scene. I was 16, playing in The band didn't last long, unfortunately. We only did like 2 bars at the time, but that was my introduction to the bar scenes, was in a Van Halen tribute band at 16.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that because, again, we kind of relate in that same way, because I left for the road when I was 16, and I ended up quitting high school, my local high school, and went to a community college because my parents, you know, they wanted me to graduate, at least graduate high school. So what happened was, when I was 16, I was going part-time to a community college where I could get my GED, and you know, I was on the road. They had to go accept my diploma for me, but they used to have to sign, and you know, for me to play at the bar, same as they did for you, I'm sure. But it was, you know, back then, it was like, I think I took it to a whole different level, and you know, I'm not going to get in too deep with that, but that, you know, contributed to certain areas of my life, which I've now, thank God, overcome and fought hard to battle. But you know, that's when you're out there alone and you got nobody really telling you what to do or how to do it at 16 years old, it's kind of, you know, for a parent, that's got to be scary.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. My dad definitely had moments where he had some talks with me. But
Right. And my father was a policeman, so it was like, you know, everything you did when I was little, you made me wear a GI haircut, told me no tattoos and no loud music. I rebelled and did all that. So God rest his soul, he was a great man, and I would do anything to have my folks back, so make sure you take care of them. So,
absolutely.
I wanted to get into a couple more things with you. you've done several styles of playing, you know, with a few different few different genres, but you were telling me the progressive funk rock, you're doing country, you got some blues going, you got some jazz, you got some metal, and even worship. Let me ask you this, because this would relate to me again. When I was younger, you know, my parents made me go to church every Sunday, and excuse me. When I was younger, it didn't affect me. That music didn't affect me like it did when I got to my teen years. But was it like that for you? Did you feel like something special, or did you even have to go to church like that when you were younger?
No, actually, I had a very, very similar experience to what you had, too. When I was younger, my parents would take us to Sunday school up until I was in eighth grade. Yeah, up until eighth grade, that's when I made my communion. And up till then, I didn't fully appreciate it until, like, I hit later in my teen years. In fact, I was 18 exactly when I tried another church, and they had a full rock band playing worship songs. And not that the rock band part was the reason I was more drawn to it, but it, like, delivered, like, the power and the feel and the message behind the song a lot more than it did in the standard church I grew up going to.
Right.
So it impacted me a lot more, like you, towards my later teen years.
Right, and I think a lot of churches are going that direction, and it is attracting, you know, younger people to different influences, but definitely music being one of them.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you again, the switch to the upright bass, was that awkward for you? Because I know, for me, playing a regular electric or acoustic bass, I have, you know, my left hand is this way, my right hand is that way, and if I would love to play a piano. I've been dying to learn how to play a piano, but as soon as I flip that left hand over, it's like I become mentally incapacitated. Everything but sound goes out the door. I can hear it, but it's just so awkward to me. I wonder if that's Did you have any other training? Do you think the violin helped you more with that switch?
The violin definitely helped make the change easier. I can't recall really struggling with the change, to be honest with you. I kind of picked it up almost as if it was second nature. Mm-hmm. Sure, you know, I struggled with trying to find the comfortable standing position and switching my plucking hand to, you know, pluck sideways now, but as far as, like, struggling completely, not really. It almost, like I said, came second nature. It was just positioning, so I got comfortable holding it. That was the little tricky part.
Yeah, because I guess I can, you know, I can hold a bass. You know, I can do the Rudy Sarzo tricks, but it's who's a great guy, by the way. But as soon as I do the whole left hand flipped over, I'm screwed. But I was gonna say I listened to some of the music with the original band you had there. What is it, Dream Spectrum, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Man, really good stuff, and it reminds me of, you know, it's got that the melodic rock sound with, you know, almost the feel of a little Dream Theater-ish kind of feel to it. And, you know, I mean, for me in 1990, when I heard that stuff, I was like, oh my goodness. And the cover band I was with at the time, we were the only band in the state of Florida that could play Pull Me Under note for note, you know, by ear. And it was...
That's amazing.
Yeah, and then grunge came in and kind of ruined it for everybody, so... I'm not gonna go there either. God rest Kurt Cobain and all that, but I gotta tell you, I'm so glad that Music with Integrity is back.
Oh yeah, I agree. It was weird with our music too, because as you heard, we're an instrumental prog band, and our first album, Emotion in Motion, was primarily written based from our influences. Like, the drummer and myself bonded and formed the band because we loved Rush. He was influenced by Neil Peart from the start. And our guitar player is a huge Joe Satriani fan, just mega fan of the guy. Yeah. And so that first album was written based on how our idols kind of wrote their songs. We kind of meshed Rush with Joe Satriani, and that's how the first album came out. And it definitely got some traction, but the biggest comment we got from that album was that there was no singer. So The technique and the technicality of playing is in there, and people noticed it, and which was awesome, because we were trying to mainly grab that attention.
Right.
But then trying to fight with the lead singer not being present was the issue we were mainly facing.
Sure, that's a tough market to get into. I mean, unless you're Joe Satriani or Dream Theater. But that's funny you mentioned that, because that's exactly what I heard when I heard the song that I played from the Dream Spectrum. I think I found it on YouTube, but I really enjoyed it. But you could hear that influence perfectly, like to a T, what you were just describing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, man.
We tried.
So, tell me a little more about what else you got going on and what's next.
So, right now, I'm still with Dream Spectrum. We're still working on writing some more material. Our last album came out 2 years ago now, so we have two albums out. Emotion, Emotions 1, and then Lost and Found is the second one. And right now, we're kind of in another transitional phase for our sound, so we're working on some new material in regards to that. Kind of a little hiatus because our drummer goes to Berkeley at the moment. So we've been writing sporadically, but I'm still with them. I'm currently active in a cover band right now called Autumnwood, which we cover everything from like the 60s up until present times. Like, we're doing Tina Turner's Proud Mary. Wow. And then we're jumping forward to doing like Bruno Mars and Lady Gaga and all that. And then there's Rush and everyone else in between.
You're actually doing venues in the Buffalo area, or is it just, are you getting compensated working? Well, I know the COVID thing is going on, but.
Yeah, so the band is relatively new. We've only been together for a year, and just when we started picking up traction, that's when, unfortunately, COVID hit. Right. But right before COVID hit, we were fortunate enough to get a residency with a beach bar in Angola, New York, called Turtle Joe's. And every Friday night through the rest of the summer, we're their main act.
Nice.
So we've been doing well since COVID. You know, the phases have been put into place. We've got that residency back. But right now, that's like our main income venue. We're still talking to other places, seeing how they're feeling about bringing live acts and stuff like that. But we at least have one consistent venue right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And very cool name for a band, by the way. When I read that, I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. But it explains a lot about the genres you're playing too, the time frames of stuff. And so I know that Florida is back down to this point where we're about to shut down again because, you know, they're closing up the bars again. And, you know, we were all free to go and do pretty much what we wanted for a while. And then now all of a sudden it's, you know, they're pulling it back on us because we're one of the states that has the highest increase since everyone's getting testing now. You know, we had like almost 80,000 people in just the past few weeks come up positive for this stuff. And it makes it difficult for people in our industry. And it's hard. And
yeah.
What I've been real impressed with are the fans. You know, the fans on Facebook are really digging and enjoying and appreciating the, you know, the live feeds of just simple acoustic stuff. And that's where I was saying I was getting a little bummed out because I didn't have any gear and I couldn't get on. And, you know, I used to do acoustic stuff around here in Florida too, which, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not the greatest singer in the world, but, you know, it's what I do. It's what I've done since I was 16, you know, play on the road. And
exactly.
That's when you get out of that and there's nothing around and you're hopelessly looking for a job at frickin' Walmart and you can't even get a job at Walmart. It's like a very humbling experience. And, I'm very thankful I've had some good people to help me along the way and when I'm down.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to tell you a story, but when we first started, it's kind of funny because I'm hearing the fireworks in the background, but they're going off here too. It's funny because we were in Europe and me and my daughter's mother, we were expecting a child, our first daughter, she was due on the 4th of July. So I was in Europe, and the big joke was, you know, I kept telling her, Mom, listen, if she is born on the 4th of July, I'm going to name her Dafofa, D-A-F-O-F-A, July McKinney. And she's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not. I'm like, yeah, I swear. Dafofa July McKinney was luckily born June 30th, so it saved a lot of harassment. So the goals are, you know, starting with what you have with Dream Spectrum and what's the Hints of Thunder? That's a country thing.
Yeah, that's a country band I play with. They're mainly a duo. It's a husband and wife band, but once in a while they'll get full band opportunities, and I'm their number one bassist to go for. They're primarily a cover band, but they have been working on originals lately, and they've been mixing that into the set. So they're kind of trying to do like a 50-50 split, but as of right now, it's a primary cover band.
And the Autumn Wood, you would call what, alternative, folk, rock, pop, basically what you're saying?
Yeah, I would basically call Autumn Wood an alternative pop rock band, because we do, like I said, almost every genre except metal, So like Tina Turner, pop, Rush is progressive, yeah. And then we do some 90s stuff, which is alternative. So we call it alternative rock pop.
So you're getting the crowds dancing and up and drinking and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Autumnwood, exactly. Autumnwood. I love that name, Autumnwood, but it's nothing like Morningwood, is it? Okay, sorry. My stupid sense of humor. One more thing. Are any of the members of the band the same from any of the other bands you play with?
No, actually. Every band I'm in has all different members. I'm like the only one that's spread out among them, but no one else in any of my current projects are members of other bands I'm involved in.
That's what I was going to get at next. Where do you find the time, man? You got a good size list of solo and fill-in gigs for you, man. That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good for you.
I want to
promote your Instagram account if you get a chance, everybody. At Bassist Braun on Instagram. That's very entertaining and very cool to watch, man. I enjoy the feed, and every day I look for something new. That little twinkly smile, I thought it was in front of a No, but you always do something cool, you know. One day you'll go from the Queen, then you'll go into the La Villa Strangiato Rush, and I'm like, wow, man, where's this guy going? It's awesome, though, man. So what do you hope to see, and what do you notice, like I said, we have some age apart, but, you know, for me, when I was starting out on the road, we actually did eat out of tuna cans and macaroni and cheese and, you know, drove around the country in a van. What do you see, or what do you want to see the direction of music going? Because it's all changing, you know. People are scared to get out anymore. There's cops looking for DWIs. What do you hope to see in the future for fans of music to be able to see good music? Any ideas?
I definitely want to see more live acts come out of this. Like, recently in, you know, modern music, you have, like you mentioned, a lot of people, I wouldn't necessarily say hiding behind a camera, but they're recording a lot of their music and then strictly just posting it on music platforms like Spotify and Pandora and YouTube, and making their music careers solely off selling their originals that they just wrote and then won't necessarily play live. And I would like to see those artists play live, because there's a lot of them who produce amazing amounts of music, mm-hmm. and I would love to see them perform it live. I'm all about visual, and that's kind of where my personal goals were to come in. Is I would love to be a touring bassist, you know, for hire for like maybe a pop star, like, you know, Ariana Grande or something like that, mm-hmm. or even just in my own personal band and tour, because I love the atmosphere of playing live. I love playing in front of people. I love seeing their reactions and the energy being exchanged. I love being a spectator, you know, one of the people in the audience looking up at the band and just really getting involved. And I would like to see a lot more of that. Like, I would also love to be a studio musician too. Just something music, touring, studio, whatever the case is.
Right.
But personally, I would like to see a lot more musicians geared towards performing live. Yeah. And have that aspect come back.
And that's what's always fed, you know, people like me, because I remember being one of those kids looking up at the stage going, man, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. And then, you know, I did, my majority of my time was with Hatchet. You know, I did several years with them, but I've done several other things. I don't toot my horn that often about it, but there's nothing in the world like, you know, standing in front of a crowd at Wacken over in Europe. You know, you're sitting on a picnic table talking to Alice Cooper on this side of you and Ronnie James Dio on this side, and we've been talking like we're friends forever. So when are we going golfing again? You know, and but to stand up there in front of 175,000 screaming people that are there to watch, you know, it shows how hungry the crowds are and how needed they are for us as players.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I think all that stuff's cool, you know, with what you do. It's entertaining, and I'm envious that you have the knowledge and how to do that stuff and make it sound so good. But there's just nothing like that live performance, you know, getting on a tour bus and going from town to town to town to see everyone's face smiling because you were the reason they're smiling. You know, you got to take away, you got to realize the rest of the world's got just as many, if not more, problems than we have. And they get that one little show a week or a weekend, they get to come out, and we get to take all that away from, we get to take the burden off their shoulders or some pain away or, you know, one simple song. You know, and we can't take that away from people. That's very important. And I just don't want to see, you know, the internet take over everything because we're already being run like robots anyway. But you can't take the emotion out of music away from the people. So I like.
No, I.
Go ahead.
No, just say I totally agree with you. I almost noticed since a couple of the phases opened up due to COVID that a lot of people are coming out wanting to see live music again. So, like, before COVID, you still had that group of people that wanted to see live acts that never went away. But I guess quarantine made all of us want to just go out more and do stuff. And I feel like the live entertainment's kind of getting that market back where it's higher again because people now want to go out and be like, all right, we were stuck inside for 3 months. Let's see something fun. And I think that's bringing back a lot of the live acts.
Right. And here's the thing about that in Florida, that happens. It's like we were teased, and now it's all being taken back again because me and my girlfriend here in town, we were going to go see a band last night. They canceled all the festivities for 4th of July. They had, you know, bands coming up, and we didn't even know it. But we drove up to the place, and it was empty. So, you know, we're starving, too. I'm starving to see something new. I got out of it for a good bit for my recovery, you know, which was the smartest thing I could have ever done. You know, I got to get some clean and sober time under my belt. And if not, I was going to die. And that's another thing. You know, a lot of bands fall into that where the, personally for me, the music became secondary and my drug of choice became primary, and it ate me alive. And that's what I'm saying about you get out there and you don't know who you're supposed to trust. You know, your parents can't see what you're doing, and you don't want them to see you anyway. But, you know, for a person like me, half Indian, half Irish, I was born addicted to something. So yeah, but thank God he saved my life, and I'm here for a reason, man, and hopefully it's to continue this, what we're doing here, and talking to people like you, educate people on, you know, get some ideas together, what you want to do, what they want to do. I'm going to bring all different types of people onto this podcast, and hopefully it catches on. If not, we're going to have fun either way, but I really, I appreciate you doing this for me because me and you've gotten a little closer here in the past couple of weeks anyway. A lot of apologizing on my part, but
you know, it's all good, buddy.
I was going to just tell you thank you so much for all that. I told you that I'm come up with 10 questions, right? Yeah,
right.
I'm going to call it the Dark 10. So wait a minute. First, before we get started on that, though, I want to know more about your endorsement, man. Your new signature bass.
Oh, okay.
That,
sure.
That thing's gorgeous.
Thank you. It's like exceeded my expectations. So it's a beaut. So I was thinking to myself back in like January. I'm like, you know, I've not to toot my own horn. I'm like you. I don't like doing that. But I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm 24 years old and I've done a pretty good decent amount already in my music career. Then I'm like, maybe I can try getting endorsed by something, even if it's just a discount off something, but just to be, you know, sponsored and say, hey, I was good enough to get cables or whatever, you know?
Right.
So I went on Google and I just simply looked up bass endorsements. I wasn't expecting anything from like Fender, Rickenbacker, you know, as much as I love Rickenbackers, but I wasn't trying for like the big name companies. I'm like, maybe I can find like a medium company, maybe a smaller company that has a, you know, reliable and trustworthy reputation that will take care of people.
Right.
And I came across MG Basses, and I did a little research on them, and I found out that they were a company that moved up to New Hampshire from Brazil back in 2013, but the company's been around since 2000. And they were in NAMM for both 2018 up until 2020. And they make handcraft basses, specifically designed for the player. And so after doing some research and found out that they are a legit company and all this stuff, they had a form on their website for endorsements.
Wow.
And I just simply applied. And they did disclaim it, though, saying that, you know, because their woods are so unique and boutique and handcrafted that they couldn't just give away bases,
right,
especially because they're a smaller company still. But they believe in endorsement discounts. And within 24 hours of emailing them, you know, giving them my Instagram, YouTube, and all that, the main luthier and the founder of the company, Mauricio Costa, contacted me back and said, I really like what you're doing, so I'd like to make you an endorsed artist. Wow. And we sat for like a good couple days building the bass that you saw on Instagram, and that request was put in February, and I got the bass June 11th, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Everything I ever wanted. As far as my knowledge, the bass is now, but it sounds better than I expected. It looks beautiful.
Right.
It's just an all around amazing bass. I have no complaints about it. I'm so thankful to be endorsed by a bass company at my age already without a major label or touring act.
Yeah.
But Mauricio Costa really set me up, and I couldn't be much more thankful.
Well, that's what I'm saying about your Instagram, that you do such a great job on that, and you're bringing people in, and you got that personable, you know, attitude where you make people feel welcome. I was working with a company out of Canada called Acer Guitars. They don't really do a lot of basses, but I became pretty close with the guy that runs the company and picks the wood himself, you know, I'm sure, like your guy does.
Mm-hmm.
But he did the same thing, you know. He's gonna try to build me something, and even if we couldn't work out something to do the full endorsement, and even at the partial, I was like, whoa. but yeah, maybe if I can come up with a nicer, if I can do that little twinkly little smile, or let me borrow your little twinkle queen song. No, but they're good people, and you know, we know some of the same people. I know, you were mentioning Sean McDabb. Sean's a friend of mine for years, man, and very good dude. And also here in Cocoa Beach is Tim Storace with the Why Not band. He's a mean-ass player, you know, especially being a Geddy Lee fan. That's the guy.
Yeah,
and he's
totally is. I'm a huge fan of him too.
Yeah, he hooked me up with the guys from Tech 21, and trying to work something out with Dale and them, and
awesome.
Rodney McGee, he's endorsed by him too. And yeah, that the 2112 pedal. Do you have that? Because that thing is unreal.
I do. I don't. My next big purchase will be the Tech 21 little Sans Amp power amp. But right now I have the little box pedal, the YYZ pedal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am in love with that thing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It emulates Geddy perfectly, you know, especially
it
when somebody like Tim playing it or somebody like you, you know, doing the right... the right notes and hitting it at the right, man. Geddy Lee is just for everybody such an influence, but Tim just nails anything Geddy does, along with the foot pedals, everything.
Oh yeah, I saw him live in Buffalo a year ago now, and I got to meet him, and just I was blown away how like so close his sound is compared to Geddy Lee's. It was unbelievable.
He got that stank face, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Wink, wink, Tim. Hopefully Tim will listen to this. You might be getting lucky tonight, dude, because I can't find my notes on my... I went over my 10 questions, so you might get lucky. If I can't find them, you might not get asked these 10. But I'm... What I'm going to do is I want to close out every interview with these 10 questions. And, you know, before we say goodnight, the first thing that comes to your mind, pop it out. Say it real quick. And let me see. Give me 1 second. Don't go nowhere. Hang in there. I'll pop in a commercial at this point, but I'm going to see if I can pull it up. Don't go nowhere. Sing us a song.
Oh, God.
Oh, there it is. Hang on. Hang on. I hope I don't hang up on you.
Oh, you're good.
No, you're good. You're there. You're still there. Oh, yeah. Are you ready?
I guess so.
Are you ready? Ladies and gentlemen, the Dark 10. The Dark 10. Question number one. What's your favorite hobby? No one would ever think would be.
Oh, man.
Other than playing.
Other than playing? I'm a very gentle guy. Guitar Hero. Yeah. But I'm very open.
Bam. That's good enough. Number two. Who's your celebrity crush?
Oh, man. That has to be Emma Stone. She was kind of popular in the mid-2000s, but Emma Stone, I'm a sucker for redheads.
Is that the Harry Potter chick?
No, Emma Stone is, she did a, I can't think of a movie she did right now.
That's right, I'll look her up. All right, number three, boxers, briefs, or open range? Not that I care, but...
Briefs.
All right.
Briefs.
Number four. Who do you consider your best friend and undoubtedly knows it?
My wife.
Good answer. Number five. Name one thing you've done where some may look at you different for doing it and still causes you conscious issues of guilt. Time to let it go, Alexander. Come on. One thing you've done where some may look at you different for doing it.
Itching the inside of my nose and them thinking I was picking it.
Okay, number six. Who is your biggest hero and mentor? I think we know by now.
Yeah. There's two people. My dad is my biggest hero. And Geddy Lee musically is my biggest deal and mentor. So my dad and Geddy Lee.
That'll work. All right, number 7, Ginger or Marianne?
Ginger.
Okay. Number 8, favorite recreational substance, past or present, if any?
If any, I don't drink.
Good.
Or smoke.
Good answer. Don't do it. I'll ruin all your endorsements if I find out you do.
I believe it.
Number 9, if you could make any choice and the country totally depended on it, who would you choose, even if not running, to be president?
Oh, man. That's a tough one. Wow. It would have to be someone peaceful, maybe someone like Gandhi, if he was still alive.
Yeah, that'll work. Let me tell you something. Number 10, where do you see yourself in 10 years?
In 10 years, I see myself doing what I love and working in the music industry full time, whether it be touring, studio work, surrounded by my loved ones, my wife, and hopefully a couple kids.
That's awesome, man. I didn't even know you were married. I'm a bad friend.
Don't worry.
All right, Alexander, I appreciate you being my first guest, man. It wasn't that bad, was it?
It was a blast. It was a lot of fun.
We'll learn as we go, and I promise to have you on again, man. I thank you so much for being a part of this, man, and I'm sorry about all the little issues in the beginning, but you put up with it like a man, and you didn't give me no shit. I think I apologized more than 100 times, but...
It was a real treat. Thank you for having me.
Listen, before you go ahead and can you do it yourself? Give me your Instagram, your YouTube, and your Facebook.
Absolutely. So my Instagram is @BassistBraun. My Facebook is Alexander Braun Music, and my YouTube channel is Alexander Bassist Braun.
Sweet, man. All of this is worth checking out, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to The Dark Room with my very first official guest, Alexander Braun. Alexander, thank you, my man. I will be in touch ASAP, my brethren of bottom. Peace.
Peace, buddy. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.